President Obama's executive orders on immigration have had reverberations throughout the federal government. They've drastically changed the way Border Patrol and immigration officers do their jobs. The changes also heavily impacted immigration judges, delaying many of their thousands of pending cases by as much as 5 years. For more on how things look from behind the bench, I spoke with Judge Dana Lee Marks. She's the president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She told me just how overloaded the court system already is.
Our statistics are always a little bit behind, and we get them from the Syracuse University website. They report as of December 31st, 2014, that there are more than 429,000 cases pending before the 58 immigration courts in the United States. Now, the courts are distributed based on population of immigrants and foreign-born individuals. So the four biggest courts are located in New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Miami. And there we have caseloads where judges on average have anywhere from over 2,200 pending cases per judge in San Francisco to Miami at the low point has approximately 1,335 cases pending per judge using those Syracuse University figures.
I'm surprised there's not a big court, say, in Phoenix or somewhere closer to the Mexican border, which is where most of the cases really originate.
There are more small cases, more small courts in the Arizona area. So no single court is that large. In the Phoenix area, there are two locations where immigration has detention facilities and people are held in custody. And then there's a non-detained court in Phoenix and a non-detained court in Tucson as well. Phoenix is one of the places where the average time that a case remains pending is number three in the country. It's over 785 days that cases tend on average to be pending in the Phoenix court because they are so backlogged and their caseload is so heavy.
So if cases came into a particular courtroom based on a, first in, first out type of basis, then what happened over the summer with the families and the unaccompanied minors wouldn't even be close to hitting the courts yet.
That's correct. And so the administration has made the decision to change from first in, first out, making recent arrivals a priority, and for the first time shifting our docketing procedures so that it is last in, first out. And what happens then is cases that have been pending on the docket for a long period of time, if they're not in that priority categorization, they end up being bumped further out. And we really don't know how long ultimately those cases will remain on the court docket before they are able to have their day in court.
Because the date given to some of those people, according to what the documents that went out from the Justice Department, is I think Black Friday, the shopping day after Thanksgiving of the year 2019. That's 5 years. That's really, it seemed like, I think in one published report said, a bureaucratic placeholder, and they really have no idea when those cases could actually come to a courtroom.
That is accurate reporting. That is correct. That's what I'm hearing as well. We don't have any inside knowledge. We are aware of hearing notices being sent out to the public, and I've heard the reports regarding the spokesperson from the Executive Office for Immigration Review stating that this is kind of a placeholder date just to help for docketing purposes rather than a firm hearing date when it is expected that those cases will be heard. Part of the problem has been is the reason these cases are pending so long on the court dockets is because we simply don't have available calendar space. We don't have a date when a judge is available with our current level of resources to hear all of these cases. So there's always a balance between scheduling a case too quickly and having it on the court calendar when it's not ready to go forward because the preliminary work that needs to be accomplished hasn't been done. You have to balance how fast you put it on with those needs against having it just languish on the court docket when it's prepared and everyone is ready to go forward, and when in fact it might even begin to be harmful to the person to have their case delayed because they can lose track of witnesses. They may have relatives that are called qualifying relatives that are needed in order for them to apply for some kind of immigration benefit. Those relatives can become sick and die. Those relatives sometimes in certain forms of relief have to be minors. They can turn 21. So there's a whole variety of ways in which people are not happy that their cases are being further delayed. And yet, because of the scarcity of resources at the immigration court, which means primarily the lack of judges and the support personnel that they need in terms of judicial law clerk and interpreters and legal technicians, because of the lack of people power to get these cases heard, the delays have just become astronomical.
We're speaking with Judge Dana Lee Marks. She is president of the National Association of Immigration Judges and speaking in that capacity. And I wanted to ask you about when a case ends up finally in court. How long do these take? Is this something that's like a traffic ticket, takes a half an hour, goodbye and good luck? Or do these take days like, you know, like some sort of a criminal trial might take several days?
We have short hearings that are similar to a criminal arraignment docket. We call them master calendar hearings, where someone will come in and we'll discuss what kind of case it is. Are there steps that need to be taken before we're ready to put it on the court calendar? Is there some form of immigration benefit they can qualify for? And those master calendar hearings can be very brief. They really are like scheduling conferences or in the medical world, like a triage, just let me figure out what's going on here. And a judge can hear anywhere from 20 to 50 of those kinds of cases in a morning or an afternoon session, just trying to figure out what needs to be done and where they should be put on the docket, advise someone of their legal rights, to let them know about the right to counsel and give them suggestions as to where to look for attorneys and those kinds of things. Then the cases are set for an individual merits hearing, and we state that those are on what we call an individual calendar. Now, those can range anywhere from a half an hour to an hour to days on end, depending on how complicated the legal issues are and how many witnesses and what kind of evidence needs to be reviewed in order to determine whether that person is in fact a deportable non-U.S. citizen and whether that person may, under the immigration laws, have some other benefit that he or she has the right to apply for.
So pretty much as a judge, you're kind of like a batter. You kind of get the pitches that are thrown at you and try to take care of them. So you could see anything from a child who's unaccompanied to a hardened criminal to a family that just wants to make a new beginning and so forth, which gets me to the question of this FIFO versus LIFO, last in, first out versus the first in, first out. Does that really change the tone and tenor of the cases? Because it seems like that would not make any more discernment than FIFO. Does that really get to the high priority cases?
The change that has occurred in moving from first in, first out to last in, first out is only having those last-in cases which meet certain priority criteria set by the Department of Homeland Security come to the front. So it's a limited last-in, first-out, if that makes sense to you. So someone who's been in the United States for 10 years, marries a U.S. citizen, and applies for their lawful permanent resident status at a USCIS office and has that application denied for some reason, that individual has the right to have their case renewed before an immigration judge. That, although the charging document, which would start the proceedings coming to the immigration court, might be dated today, that case would not receive a last-in, first-out treatment unless it meets other priority criteria. And the main priority criteria, the number one, has always been for people who have criminal records. Other than that, then what is different since the surge of border crossers in the summer is that added to the priority are recent entrants. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense than just simply reversing the order of however they get here. And what about children, unaccompanied minors? What are the special challenges they might pose to a judge?
Those are incredibly challenging cases for immigration judges because it's a particularly vulnerable population, especially when you realize that, many of them are fleeing traumatizing circumstances in their homeland. But even if they were leaving from a wonderful country with a very happy home life, if they come across the border unaccompanied, generally speaking, they've been through some pretty grueling and traumatic circumstances before they get here. So the challenge is to get them appropriate guardians, to make sure that they are given the opportunity to find attorneys to represent them. And we're very blessed in our field that a tremendous number of good-hearted volunteers are stepping forward, that many states are realizing, and states and cities are realizing, that these children are particularly vulnerable and need appointed counsel, and they're setting up funds to pay for volunteers to represent them. So they're no longer volunteers. It increases the number of skilled lawyers that are available because there is some funding for nonprofit organizations to hire attorneys to then go ahead and render those services. It's a much more intense process for a judge in terms of, it's recognized when you deal with juveniles that you have to slow down the process, that you need to not be intimidating, that you need to make sure when you educate someone about what their rights are in court, that you do that at a level which is appropriate, whoever that person is. And if that's an unaccompanied minor, then obviously you have to go in more depth and go more slowly. We're frequently, if not always, working through foreign language interpreters. So that slows the proceedings down a little bit. And part of what we need in order to make the right decision in a case as an immigration judge is for people to tell us their stories. And if you have someone who is reluctant to talk to you because they are afraid, as many people from countries where the judges are part of the law enforcement mechanism, they've heard horror stories and they've heard about corrupt officials. So you need to take the time to develop some kind of rapport, and particularly with unaccompanied minors, to make them feel safe enough to tell you the truth of what their circumstances are, which can be extremely traumatic or sometimes humiliating. They can be victims of domestic violence or other forms of abuse. We have to be alert that they haven't been trafficked, either for sex trafficking or for labor trafficking. There's all kinds of additional nuances which make those cases particularly challenging and time-consuming for a judge.